Welcome to Paranormal Coffee Hour. We're your hosts, Jen.
And Courtney.
And we're pouring you a strong cup of the weird, the wonderful, and the woohoo. On today's Paranormal Coffee Hour, we are talking about mediumship and psychics. And we have two guests joining us today on the podcast. Our first guest you've met before, Mr. Kent Summer.
Hi, how are you?
And a second is a new guest for us, Miss Heather.
Hello.
So what we want to do today is we really want to explain basically the differences between psychics and mediums, but also give you an idea of how they both work and how to spot fake ones. We're also going to talk a little bit about the spiritualist movement and how it connects back to psychic mediums. So what is the difference between a psychic and a medium?
I'll tell you the difference. A psychic connects with the individual sitting before them and uses both tools and intuition to focus in and bring clarity to a question the individual has about their life. Example, love, relationships, career, money, and more. They will not give you the fucking lottery numbers, though.
No, because we can't. We're not given that information.
If they had the lottery numbers, then they would have had the lottery winnings already, and it wouldn't even be a challenge.
Exactly.
This clarity can be used by the individual to make informed decisions for their ideal outcome. But there is free will, peeps, which that comes to this next one. Free will exists, so telling your future isn't the goal for intuitive psychics. More like telling you what could happen if you decide to go forward on a certain path. A medium uses their energy to connect with your deceased loved ones on the other side. There's a whole bunch of different mediums that we can get into.
So when we talk mediums, we talk about a couple different kinds. The first is probably the most well-known, which is an evidential or a mental medium. This is what I am and what Kent is. And we use basically evidence given to us by the spirit world to help you, who's sitting in front of us, know exactly with whom we're speaking with. So for example, you might get information coming in as, you know, you can see it or you can hear it. And sometimes, if you're lucky or maybe unlucky as a medium, you can smell it.
Oh, delish.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the worst thing you've smelled?
Worst thing I've smelled as a medium? The men's Dracar Noir cologne. But like, you know, when somebody over douses themselves in
so
it.
So like middle school?
Middle school. Mm-hmm. Where it's kind of like the 80s, 90s version of Axe body spray. Mm-hmm. And it was way overdone. And I'm like, it was bad. I mean, I guess there could be worse. Have you ever smelled anything as a medium?
No.
Okay.
So you don't even get like cigarette smoke or anything like that?
I don't think I've been doing it long enough to have all the same experiences.
I haven't even been doing it that long. And I get cigarette smoke and stuff like that.
Cigarette smoke's a really common one.
I think it's just because Kent's a guy and so he doesn't really have any bad smells.
Okay. Never mind. I won't go there.
Honestly, Claire, like the Claire of smelling or the Claire of factory is really rare.
Really?
It does happen, but it's one of the least common ones used in the spirit world to communicate with a medium.
Oh, that's weird because I get it quite often.
And some people are just lucky that way.
I don't find it luck sometimes.
It depends on the smell.
But I mean, I've had the clairsentience of feeling, you know, sick or feeling a heart attack or feeling drunk or, you know, by a spirit as a means of communication. And the worst ones are the medical things that you feel. And you usually have to vocalize it before it'll go away. So if I try to ignore it, it actually gets worse because they're like, no, this is what we're trying to tell you. And it's intense. Probably the worst clairsentience I ever had was the feeling of having shot myself in the head.
Well, that one's rude.
Uh-huh. But of course, I was unfortunately working with a suicide.
Which makes sense.
Spirit who committed suicide at the time. Mm-hmm. Trance mediums are fascinating. These are people who can put themselves in a self-hypnotic trance that allows spirits from the other side to directly use them as a conduit to speak through their voice. It is a form of physical mediumship, but this blending with the spirit creates an experience where you're directly speaking with the spirit and the medium's body is used as the conduit. So what can happen in this sense is the medium's voice may change, usually does. It can become feminine or it can become masculine, and it doesn't matter on the sex of the medium. They can speak languages that they've never learned. Their physical features, and this is why we say it's a form of physical mediumship, their physical features can change.
Like somebody pointed out, think Whoopi Goldberg and Ghost.
Yes, that was a version of trance mediumship. Then we have trance healing mediumship. So it's taking the trance mediumship one step further, connecting with the spirit world, but instead of bringing through somebody's relative or someone's connection to the spirit world, you're bringing through a spirit who has the ability to use you as a conduit to move energy through you and into another person to help heal them. This is very, very fascinating to watch. I was very skeptical. We got to see it performed. Kent and I did when we were at Arthur Findlay College, which we'll talk more about in a little bit. But this is a kind of healing that can literally take place and make differences instantly.
That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. There is another form of mediumship that's creepy as all hell. And I didn't talk about this one in the live. It's physical mediumship. And I was sharing this with Heather just a little bit ago. Physical mediumship is where a medium can take their energy and push their energy out so that an actual physical presence of a spirit can manifest. We were talked to by our mentor about how he attended a demonstration of mediumship at Arthur Findlay in the room we were sitting in. Do you remember this, Kent? Where they created so much energy around them that it permitted them to actually allow a spirit to form. And that spirit literally was able to go to each person in the room and shake their hand.
Okay, that's fucked up. But we also know enough mediums in our own little circle. Let's get a group going.
Spirit circle.
You know, how much energy would you need? How many people?
You'd need a good amount. This was a group of mediums meeting together. So a good amount of people to attune their energy, build their auric field, and build that energy up for a spirit to literally be able to manifest.
And the spirit, I'm assuming, needs to be willing to want to shake everybody's hand, fist well, bump.
I mean, that's what that one spirit did, but there's been other spirits. Matthew was telling us one spirit came through for one of the mediums, and it was her husband, and he brought her a flower.
Shut the fuck up.
And literally handed her a flower. And then when he dissipated, she still had the flower. It was an actual physical flower.
Huh.
I know.
All right. Game on. New goals.
The ability of mediumship is just intense and crazy. But there's so many different kinds of it. And most people are evidential mediums. Very few want to let themselves go into trance mediumship, including myself, just because it's very much a loss of control. One of the more famous trance mediums that's no longer in the living is Sybil Leek. She worked with Hans Holzer, helped work on a lot of paranormal cases with him. She would even have it where her physical features changed dramatically as she was being used as a vessel for the spirit. So in mediumship, we use the emotions within us to basically help the spirit world communicate with us. So spirit's like, okay, you've had all these experiences, you've got all these emotions, I'm going to pull from all your files and I'm going to show you things that you understand so that you can get a better message across to the person that you're reading for.
Is there a way to have a privacy lock on some of those files? Because there are some things I don't think I want people going through.
That's a valid question.
I've seen those things and you're right.
No.
That's funny. Those are Heather's files, not even mine.
I know.
I've seen your files too.
Bullshit.
You ought to be ashamed.
Bullshit. You're a creeper.
No kidding.
I am.
While we're all sitting down having coffee hour, he's over there going through people's phones.
No one's mentally allowed on my phone.
Mentally. Kent's pushing his auric field out to everybody and reading all their personal business.
So that's really why he went to training. He wanted to get more personal information off of people's phones without touching them.
Yeah. No shit. This doesn't work just in the mediumship, though, because I was thinking about this when we were doing the coffee hour. When we did the little investigation with Sixth Sense, I know Greek mythology. When we saw what was on your property or outside the property, the first thing I thought of was
Minotaur.
The Minotaur.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kevin's like, no, it's not. It's this. But every time I thought of it, the Minotaur comes up.
Right.
But it's not. It's the other thing.
Right.
But
they're using what you know.
What I know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, no shit. Huh. All right. That makes more sense.
It's what makes mediumship sometimes really difficult for people to trust what they get, because spirit is pulling from your files of your life experiences and you're going, yeah, but they don't know my Uncle Steve. Why are you showing me this experience I had with my Uncle Steve? And spirit's, you know, smacking their palm to their head going, that's not what we're trying to show you. We're showing you this is a similar experience you've had. Use the experience to talk about it, not the exact people.
Mm-hmm. Is this why we don't have any like 10-year-old psychic mediums? Because they don't have the amount of files and memories to draw from?
But we do.
I was going to say, there used to be a show
Psychic
with Chip Coffee.
Yeah. Psychic kids. Here's the thing. Anybody of whatever age can be a psychic medium or a medium. And we'll talk more about like why everybody can be one. Kids can be a medium without the experiences. The problem is what we talked about in coffee hour, the connection aspect isn't there. So they can still communicate what they see. But what happens when you're working with somebody one-on-one is if you don't have that experience, you can't connect to the emotional aspect.
And they might end up having to get it in a different way than what you and I would get it in. Like I get it in pictures. They might end up getting it in different ways.
I've seen a lot of children who have this ability where it's very literal. Mm-hmm. It's not like as adults, sometimes it'll come through as like an analogy or a metaphor. But for children, it oftentimes is just very literal. This happens, then this happens, then this happens. So it doesn't mean that you have to have all the experiences, but the more that you have, the easier it is for spirit to connect into that and help you connect with the person you're reading for. And it makes it a much more robust experience for your sitter or the person you're reading. That's why I often say, if I'm not somebody's psychic medium, I don't take offense to that because they couldn't connect with me. It's because I don't have the experiences that spirit needed to give me that really strong connection to that person. And so they might benefit from someone else.
Oh, you
and
that's okay. Definitely my psychic medium.
Reading for a family the other night, I was telling them that and they're like, you're our medium. Don't worry.
We claim you as ours.
I know. So let's talk about the fact that I believe, and I think many of us believe, everyone has psychic mediumship abilities. So the question is, how is that so? What do you guys think? Why would everybody be able to do this?
I think in the most basic sense, everybody has some psychic ability just with what you would call your own gut instinct. If you're walking into any kind of situation and your gut says, this is a bad place, get out. That's the most basic form of psychic because that's where the psychic comes from, is your solar plexus chakra.
Yeah.
And it runs through the nervous system, and that's where you literally get the gut instinct.
Yes. So we all have it where somebody walks into the room that we can't see, but we can sense that somebody came in. That is a version of psychic ability.
You're an energy reader.
And the reason we're all programmed for this is because we all have a nervous system that can pick up on it. We're so used to only using our five senses and the world supporting only the use of our five senses that we think it's strange that we should be able to extend beyond that, but we can't. Extrasensory perception is a real thing. And all it means is being able to read the energy around you at different frequency levels.
It gives me the heebie-jeebies just thinking about it.
Why?
Because I can feel it running down the back of my neck.
Well, but if you think about it from a basic standpoint of survival.
It's your fight or flight.
Yeah, exactly. It's your fight or flight response. And that's something that we would have needed in order to continue as a species. So it makes sense that there would be something there. But as we created more technologies to make ourselves safer, we don't necessarily have to listen to that response anymore. If you don't use it, you lose it. And then now we're in a situation where it's, is that really what's going on? Or is that something I should listen to?
But I'm a good energy reader too. I can walk into a room at work and be like, oh, I'm to back the fuck out.
Get out.
Yep.
Today is not the day.
Nope.
And see, I come into a room like that with a sledgehammer.
Right. Yeah. See?
And everybody's like, back the fuck out. Kent just walked in the room.
We're all calling it an early day now.
That's how I get to go home early.
All right, taking notes.
So in essence, all of us are like radios. And all we need to do is learn how to attune or tune in ourselves into the different energy frequencies. One of those being the frequency of the spirit world, which is what mediums work with. Let's talk a little bit real quickly about how we do that. And we're going to talk about the aura. A lot of people have gotten used to hearing the word aura. I can read your aura. You know, I can see your aura.
What's it say, bitches?
It says you're a bitch.
Oh, all right. I can tell you that.
It all depends on the color, right?
It's supposed to, yes.
Yeah. So but, Courtney's color is bitch or?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, got it.
But one thing that we learned about color when Kent and I were at Arthur Findlay is that the color of someone's aura pertains to how they interpret that color. So, for example, so often people are like, you've got the color blue. It means calm. No, it's not that basic. That's too basic, bitch. Okay.
Oh, I love it. Well played.
The blue means, what does it mean for that person?
Mine would be blue.
So if you've got blue in your aura, I can't just pull out a flip chart and go, this means this. I have to actually then read the rest of your energy to find out what that blue could mean for you within your aura.
I'm floating in the ocean.
So a lot of times people have these you've got red in your aura. It's angry. Red in your aura could represent strength.
Or even love isn't love.
It could represent love.
Because blue for me, and instantly I thought sadness, not calm.
See? And this is why when people try to teach these things, they like to give it just a basic, like, this is what it means. But that's not true. It's what does it mean for that person? So your aura is your energy field. It does have color to it. The color just pertains to where your energy is at, mostly because it has a frequency, all colors do. And so when your energy is at different frequencies, it's going to have different colors depending on what's important to you or what's happening at the time.
Is this like a mood ring?
It is.
I was thinking hot, cold.
In kind of that respect. We'll simplify it to the mood ring. You can actually feel your aura. We had everybody at coffee hour do this by kind of bouncing your hands together. And just kind of bringing them together and then pulling them apart and feeling the push of your auric energy in there.
She's showing us how to do it again.
I am.
It made me think you were stretching melty cheese between your hands.
Taffy.
Or yeah. Rubber bands.
Well, and then what we talked about in coffee hour too is it's not necessarily a push, but sometimes it's just the resistance, a feeling of resistance of going all the way in.
Yeah. We also talked about the fact that if your hands are really close together and that's where you feel your aura, kind of the push, that you might have your aura pulled in really far. And that's okay. But if you want to practice psychic abilities or mediumship, your goal is to try and learn how to push that out farther. Because that's actually how we work. We attune ourselves by meditating and basically getting our energy level built up so that we can then push our aura out. And in a psychic or intuitive reading, we push it out so that we can actually push it into someone else's aura.
She wants to touch you.
Just with her aura, though, okay?
Just with my aura, okay? I'm going to hug you with it, Courtney.
Well, you don't like physical hugs. We got to hug you somehow.
Which was funny because when she started doing that reading, I'm like, I could feel her.
Like, could you feel my aura push?
Yes. I was like,
stop so that's touching why me you were with crying.
Stop touching me with your aura.
I'm getting closer. It's touching me.
It's funny because you think about it as a kid when you're like, I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you.
It was like Lilo and Stitch.
But, you know, for psychic, we have to do that. And when somebody sits in front of you for a psychic reading, they give you permission to sort of invade their auric field or their aura so that you can read them.
Is that in the fine print somewhere?
I don't remember that. She goes, as soon as you sit down in front of me, you gave me permission. The fuck I did?
Bitch, you asked for a reading.
So that's why I haven't gotten one in so long.
She got tired of you touching her with her aura, with your aura, so she stopped coming.
When we do mediumship, we once again push our auras out. So we attune, and that attunement is just building the power within us to push our aura out. And then spirit world, meets us halfway, because the level at which spirit works at is a level of energy no human could possibly achieve completely on their own. So spirit will lower their energy level slightly. It's not a lot, but they'll lower it slightly to blend with our auric field so that the information flows better. So when we get a lapse or that moment where it's like, you know, radio static, it's because most likely our aura started to creep back in and we have to kind of push it back out again. Attunement is something that is done through meditation. It's very, very difficult for a lot of people to meditate, including myself, but that's because of monkey mind. So, Courtney, what is monkey mind like?
Squirrel!
Kent, what's your monkey mind like?
I've got so much shit to do.
Yeah. It's like lists running through. There's, you know, random things going through your line of sight that you're like, oh my God, I got to get this done. And basically what you have to do in order to focus the mind is acknowledge it and just keep bringing your focus back. Not judging it, right? Because as one of our participants said, if you judge it, then you start to throw yourself out of the meditation state. And then you're focused on like, oh, I'm not doing this right.
I'm such a shitty person.
Mm-hmm.
So would it disrupt the meditation if you were to write down those things? Like if you're coming up with a list of things of all the things you have to do today?
For me, it would.
Yeah. It's one of those times where this is not the time, okay? Because remember what your focus is. Your focus is to pull yourself into a state where you can build your energy so that you can work with spirit or work with another person in a psychic way.
And in some ways, that our druidic studies helps where I'm trying to come into the woods or whatever, the glen, because I can imagine that easier.
Yes.
Than having to imagine just nothingness.
I did actually use our druidic studies when we were at Arthur Findlay, where I was struggling one day and I'm like, I am blending with the tulip tree out there because it's strong and it helps me just stay focused. I know that sounds really strange, but blending with a tree or with nature can sometimes pull you back into
focus. So just to kind of clarify, you guys are talking about more like a imagery while you're trying to meditate so that you're kind of coming up with a place in your mind to help you stay focused.
Kind of.
Yeah. In our druidic studies, they ask that you go to like a glade or it's a wooded circle that you go to, and that's where you do your meditation. For me, it's easier to meditate in that circle.
It gives you both the imagery, the peace, you know, instead of letting the monkey mind run all over, if your monkey mind focus might run to like, oh, there's a tree over here, or oh, there's a bird over here within your mind.
Like you can see the altar, you can see the circle of trees, you see the grass, the field, whatever. Or I put a river in mine, of course. There's always water.
But do you go trout fishing?
No. No fishing. There might be trout in it, but I'm not trying to catch the little fuckers.
When we talk about raising this energy level through meditation, I mean, some people are like, well, I don't ever want to be a medium, or I don't ever want to be a psychic.
You don't have to be.
You don't. But learning how to do this, how to build your energy, you can use it however you want. Meaning like, I just want to be able to be more empathetic with somebody that I love. Because building the energy that way will allow you to blend and connect with people that you care about.
If you ever pull up to work and you have to sit in your car and take 5 deep breaths before getting out of the car and going in, that's you building your energy to go in there and deal with the shit show you're walking into.
Ah, when?
Did you just say ah, when?
I did.
Instead of amen.
I did.
That is my new thing now. Thank you, Courtney. This buildup of your auric field allows you to feel the slight differences in energy. And let me tell you, once you learn how to feel slight differences in energy, you're going to be able to pick up on things that aren't good for you or are good for you a lot more easily. Because it builds that intuition and that ability to go, that gut instinct that Ken was talking about, this doesn't seem right, this doesn't feel right, and actually trust it. Or I'm scared, but this feels like a good decision.
Yes.
Because fear does not always equal bad.
Right.
It just means I'm scared to fail, or I'm scared because There's uncertainty, something along those lines. But being able to tell the nuances or the real subtle differences in energy will help you know, is it feel like a good thing or feel like a bad thing? And then you can decide if you're going to take the risk. No matter what you decide to do with the abilities that we all have, according to well-known spiritualist medium Gordon Higgins, the spirit world has an interest in you. Now go find out what it is.
Creepy fuckers.
So speaking of spiritualists, Courtney, why don't you talk to us a little bit about the spiritualist church?
Spiritualism is an actual religion, and it's a movement based on the belief that departed souls can interact with the living. Spiritualists sought to make contact with the dead, usually through the assistance of a medium. Modern spiritualism traces its beginning to a series of apparently supernatural events at a farmhouse in Hydesville, New York in 1848. Now, this is in the States, people. The owner and his family, as well as the previous occupants of the house, had been disturbed by unexplained raps at night. After a severe disturbance, the owner's youngest daughter, Kate Fox, was said to have successfully challenged the supposed spirit to repeat in raps the number of times she flipped her fingers. Once communication had apparently been established, a code was agreed upon by which the raps given could answer questions, and the spirit was said to have identified himself as a man who had been murdered in the house. Later on, Kate and her sister, Maggie Fox, were determined to be frauds.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate part of the Fox sisters, is they are the start of the spiritualist movement. However, they are fraudulent in what they were able to do or what actually happened.
Because they were really big in the movement.
They were big in the movement, so much so that I believe they were also brought over the ocean to the United Kingdom.
Yeah, and they also had their house moved into Lilydale, which we'll talk about later.
Excellent.
So were they entirely frauds, or was it one of those situations where they felt like they needed to so sensationalize what was going on that they were doing bad tactics?
Yes and no. Honestly, what happened, as far as I'm aware, is what happened in their home was true, but then becoming, kind of like you said, becoming popular, becoming more well-known, they started using tactics that were more fraudulent. And unfortunately, the spiritualist movement does have a period of time where there was some very fraudulent, unethical tactics that were used by some, not all, to basically show that there was communication coming from the dead.
Especially in the seances.
Yes, that's where it was the easiest for them to fake things or make things look like their spirit communication. And it's just like a trick of the light, or there's like a flash paper that they would have, stuff like that. Unfortunately, because of that, you have people who discount actual mediums, which also existed at the time, obviously. So it's very frustrating for the spiritualist movement to have this happen. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of people who were taking it very seriously and were working it legitimately.
Right. The unconventional new movement naturally provoked opposition. There were not only verbal condemnations, but occasional mob violence. Church leaders associated spiritualism with, of course, witchcraft.
The devil.
Surprise, surprise. Some churches regarded the practices of the spiritualists as part of the forbidden activity of necromancy. Communication with the dead in order to learn the future. A decree of the Holy Office of the Roman Catholic Church in 1898, surprise, surprise, condemned spiritualistic practices, though it approved of legitimate scientific investigation of related phenomena. Both Protestant and Catholic bodies released a steady stream of anti-spiritualist literature.
Is that the only thing they ever agreed on?
I'm pretty sure.
The Catholics and Protestants.
Yeah. About right. Although inherently religious during its first generation, the movement avoided organizing as a church. Spiritualist associations began to appear in some areas of the United States in the first decades after the Civil War and finally formed a nationwide organization, the National Spiritualist Association, later the National Spiritualist Association of Churches in 1893. Now, it became really popular in the Civil War because people could not say goodbye to their dead because they just buried them wherever they died.
Yep.
And so they wanted to say goodbye to their dead. And this was how they were able to, was the seances and everything else.
So do you think that maybe the activity would have been increased as well? Because you have a lot of unexpected violent deaths, that there would have been more ghost activity as well.
I mean, just go to Gettysburg and you will be almost guaranteed to have a paranormal experience because of the amount of death and in the short amount of time that it took place.
I went to Gettysburg as part of my like eighth grade trip to DC. We did a stop in Gettysburg.
I bet you didn't appreciate it like you would now.
Oh, no, not at all. Mm-hmm. A bunch of teenagers on a bus. We were like, yeah, okay, this is boring. Let's go.
I took my niece with my ex-husband to go see like Washington, DC. We did like a little tour and one of our stops was Gettysburg and we stayed at a hotel in Gettysburg that had been used as a hospital.
Oh, fuck.
During the war. And I told her, she was, mind you, she was in sixth grade at the time. So I told her, hey, this place is going to be haunted. And we seriously had to sleep with the television on that night because she was so deathly afraid of getting woken up by a spirit.
Oh, my Lord.
And I felt like the biggest asshole. But it's so freaking funny.
I think she still sleeps with the TV on.
She probably does.
Oh my gosh. Spiritualism also inspired the rise of the discipline of psychic research to examine the claims made by mediums and their supporters. A variety of techniques were developed to study not only basic psychic experiences, examples, telepathy, clairvoyance, and precognition, which I have and it's creepy, but the more complex phenomenon of spirit contact. By the end of the 19th century, significant efforts were being made to verify the phenomena of mediumship, especially the occasional materialization of spirit entities. That's what I thought. We were just talking about
yep,
that.
Yep, with physical mediumship. Yep.
We're going to get that fucking circle going yet. Many who participated in psychic research hoped for positive results and occasionally concluded that they had proved the existence of clairvoyance or established the reality of spirit contact. Among the most prominent supporters of spiritualist claims was the chemist Sir William Crookes, a president of the Royal Society, the National Scientific Organization of Great Britain, who investigated and pronounced genuine the materialization phenomena produced by medium Florence Cook.
So the ultimate goal of spiritualists is actually to provide mediumship. And in their aim with mediumship, it is to prove the continuity of life. That means that when the physical body dies, the spirit still continues and that we all have the capacity to reconnect with that spirit of that person. When you go to a spiritualist service, much of the time during that service is devoted to what we call demonstration mediumship. So you will have very, very good mediums come in that are spiritualists, and they will do a gallery read for the church and show the continuity of life through reading for people. They will pull in a spirit and then they will basically give lots of points of evidence so that they can then find out who that spirit connects to.
That's so cool. I'd go to a church service like that.
We got to do that when we went to Arthur Findlay.
Twice.
Yes. And we were just blown away by our tutors there when they demonstrated their mediumship. I knew they were good, but damn, are they good.
So instead of going to church and being like, you're a sinner, you're a sinner, you're a sinner.
The message is basically outside of the demonstration of mediumship, there's also the messages from spirit, which are supposed to encourage us and empower us in our lives. So it's very, very positive energy that comes out of this.
I love that.
And they're not super long.
Oh, I love that even more.
I think we were in there. We were in there for an hour and a half, but that also included the demonstrations of mediumship as well as other elements of the service. And it didn't feel like an hour and a half. It went like quick. So I keep bringing up Arthur Findlay. And before Courtney goes on with some of the other areas of spiritualist locations, Arthur Findlay is located in Stansted, England, which is about an hour northwest of London. It's actually between London and Cambridge. And Arthur Findlay was a college of spiritual sciences that was started by James Arthur Findlay. He actually gave the property over to the Spiritualist National Union in the UK so that they could start a school. And it is the premier location in the world for learning mediumship abilities. This is also because of all the desire to verify mediumship in that. The UK has decided that they are requiring mediums to be certified. And this is where UK mediums can get certification. They don't certify the rest of us outside the UK.
Which this makes sense because spiritualism fared better in Britain, especially in the 50s after the repeal of the witchcraft laws, which had been used against mediums quite apart from any charges of fakery.
That's interesting, because the whole reason spiritualism actually evolved over the pond to the UK is because Queen Victoria herself was a really big believer in the spiritualist movement.
And spiritualism was so big in Brazil that they actually had the founder of spiritualism, Allan Kardec, was pictured on the Brazilian stamps.
That's amazing. What's sad is the fact that spiritualism existed in our state of Wisconsin, and we were actually a hotbed for spiritualism for one period of time.
Yes, we were. And it's funny that we were such a hotbed because Harry Houdini was also in our state, and he was very against it.
Yeah, that's surprising.
But we didn't have some pretty historical figures that were fairly into spiritualism.
Yeah, we did. Especially at the time, we had people like Thomas Edison, Mae West, Mary Todd Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln's wife.
Which is, I feel like, a given. Mm-hmm. If you knew anything about the Lincolns.
Conan Doyle was a big spiritualist, but of course he is also, I believe, British. Mm-hmm. We had quite a few. And we had, if you listen to our Whitewater podcast, Morris Pratt, who came over from New York into Wisconsin, set up the very, very first school of spiritualism in the world, which was Morris Pratt Institute in little old Whitewater.
Little old Whitewater. A listen to that one.
That institute still exists today in Milwaukee. They moved it. But we have spiritualist churches in Wisconsin located in Milwaukee and Madison. But that's really it.
Yep.
So if you want to become part of the spiritualist church, unfortunately, you have to be closer to those areas. It's kind of a pain in the butt. And we have a spiritualist camp that also takes place in Wisconsin, just north of Madison. So the spiritualist movement, though, in the U.S. really took hold by Hydesville. And what did they develop over there in New York?
Are you talking about Lilydale? Yes, they have a spiritualist town called Lilydale. They also have a community in the south of Florida called Casadega, which it's just their snowbird town.
Snowbirds!
Because, I mean, who wants to be living in New York when it's fucking cold? Not me.
Who wants to live in Wisconsin when it's cold?
Not me, but that's where I was fucking born and raised, I guess. So Lilydale contains 160 private residences, two hotels, a guest house, spiritualist and New Age bookstores, two eateries, and a cafe. Free summer program booklets announce events such as mediumship demonstrations, religious services, workshops, thought exchange meetings, and healing services. Visitors can also find campgrounds for either a tent or recreation vehicles, picnic grounds, and a lakefront beach for swimming and sunbathing. Admission on Sunday mornings is waived to allow for church attendance.
That's cool. So Lilydale gets approximately 22,000 visitors each year.
That's a lot because they're only open so many months.
I know. You have to be vetted in order to live in Lilydale and work as a psychic medium there. Well, first of all, I think you have to be part of the Spiritualist National Union in the U.S. And then second of all, they vet your abilities. And if they determine that you are capable and that they have space, they will allow you to live there for that period of time. And basically hang up your shingle. But if not, sorry.
The pictures are really cute. It's like a nice little wooded glen like
area. It makes me think of Fish Creek.
Yes.
Yeah. Like yes. Little cottages and it's all cute and yeah.
And kitschy like.
Yeah. So with the prevalence of so many psychics and mediums out there today, it is very, very easy to get lured in by people who unfortunately are not very good psychic mediums.
It's like another new age rolling in.
It is. It's become very popular. And as that, everybody wants to do it. Even though everybody can, not everybody trains themselves to do it ethically. So we're going to spot how to tell if someone's being unethical in their psychic or mediumship abilities. So the number one way to spot an unethical psychic medium is if they ask you too many questions. You should never be asked to answer more than yes or no. I always personally, as a psychic medium, want to know more about the story than what I'm picking up, but I ask my clients not to tell me until I'm finished reading for them. Then they can fill me in on anything that I said that made sense to them, but was, you know, cryptic to me. But I also ask clients not to go stone-faced. Because when you stone face a psychic medium, it makes it really difficult for that medium to know if you're connecting with the information. So even though we don't need you to tell us more than yes or no, just being a little bit more emotion, like, yes, that makes sense. No, I don't know what you're talking about. Being a little more flowing like that actually does make a difference, because otherwise a stone face is almost like running up against a brick wall for us. And we're going, they said yes, but does that really make sense to them? You start to question it.
Sometimes it feels like you're in bitch mode too, and you're like, no, that's just not cool.
Yeah. So do not keep going with someone who is already asking you questions. They should never be asking you all the questions as a psychic or medium. Second way to see if somebody is using unethical means is if they keep their reading overly vague and they're leading you into giving information out. So for example, if a psychic says to you, you're about to make a big life decision, and then they don't elaborate.
What the hell am I going to do?
Mm-hmm. This is a cue that they are either very inexperienced and nervous, or they're using unethical means because they don't know what to do next.
It's just a fishing line.
It is a fishing line. More than that, the sitter gets really excited by information and often too easily gives up what they are expecting when they hear something like this. So do your best not to give away too much information to the psychic medium. If a psychic medium ever tells you they will need your help in understanding vague messages, walk away from them. It's their job, not yours as a sitter, to go back to spirit and ask for more information. So here's some things to leave you with as thoughts. And this is kind of where we get to the point where we say, it's up to you what you think. As psychic mediums, do you really believe that all of us have the capability to tune in to energy to the point where we're able to communicate with the spirit world? And I'm going to ask my guests today what they think about that.
Like I said, I think that we definitely have some innate abilities in us that just stem from past the necessary
survival techniques.
Yes, thank you. That we needed those survival techniques. So there is something there. But I do think that to a certain extent, we kind of, if you don't use it, you lose it. And it just kind of goes to the side. But yeah, I think to a certain extent, everybody has the ability to do something as long as they can believe in themselves and kind of trust their gut instinct and what's going on.
Kent, what do you think?
I think it's all hooey. No.
I'm like, you're full of shit.
No, it's honestly something that any one of us can listen to if we take the time to listen.
Even Kent can do it.
What does he always say?
I'm a potato.
Yeah, there's that too.
I don't know. What else do I always say?
Something about you need to trust yourself more.
That's true. As working in mediumship and even working in psychic abilities, there's no hierarchy between them. They're just different energy levels, but both require you to tune yourself, get your aura dialed in, so to speak, and then trust what you get, which is really hard to do.
Yes, it is.
A lot of people think that when we talk about seeing things as a medium or as a psychic, we literally see them. And what it really is we see them within our mind's eye.
Yeah. You just get like a picture of it and you're like, put it into your head. That doesn't seem right.
Yeah. There are some mediums who do actually see spirits as though they're human beings, like living human beings. And then they get really confused and they're like, are you living or are you dead?
So when someone just walks up and touches you, be like, oh, you can feel me?
Which is a better way to say it than, you can feel me.
Courtney, what's your thought on the ability to have the powers to connect with spirit?
I think everybody has them. It's just whether they want to admit it or whether they want to trust in it. I think there's more people scared of it than anything.
I agree. So here's some of my own thoughts to leave you all with. There really is no separation between our worlds of the living and the worlds of those in spirit. There's just different layers of energy. I believe that the sensitive medium is one who works in knowing and not in performing, because the goal is to let your mediumship unfold naturally and not to imitate other mediums. Because as we talked about before, everyone has different experiences, and spirit will use your experiences to connect with very certain people because you have those authentic understanding of it. The last thing is, and this is what I learned at Arthur Findlay, the goal of life is to allow the God source or universal source or however you wish to call it within you to come into full bloom and to find out how spirit wants to work through you. So now would be a good time to put down your cup of coffee and really think about, what is your belief in psychic mediumship? Do you believe that it's something that all of us can do, or do you still see it as something that only a few can do and it's a gift? or do you not believe in it at all?
That it's a hoax.
Whatever your belief is, keep it weird.
Keep it wonderful.
And keep it woohoo.
Woohoo.